When you hear the word fragile, what comes to mind?
Don't touch.
Stay away.
It's about to break.
So if that describes fragile, what do you picture when you hear anti-fragile?
Robust.
Strong.
Resilient.
Yeah, these are definitely an improvement over fragile.
But this week's book claims that anti-fragile is so much more.
It's the negative of fragile.
Yeah, not just slightly better than broken.
But leaps and bounds better.
In fact, anti-fragile things thrive in chaos.
Well, how's this possible? Let's see here in Nisan Taleb's book, Anti-Fragile, Things That Gain from Disorder.
Welcome back. You're listening to Motivation Minute, where we unravel the timeless truths in that stack of books you've been wanting to read so that you don't have to. And this week's book is Anti-Fragile, Things That Gain from Disorder. On this episode, we have the person who recommended this to us, who is a listener of the podcast and found us through the survey. Welcome to the show, Mary Miller.
Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
It's awesome
to have you. Yeah.
So you brought up this book, Anti-Fragile. I wonder if in like 60 seconds, if you can give a quick synopsis of what's going on here to jumpstart our conversation.
Well, anti-fragile is something that we rarely hear talked about because there's not really a word for it until the word anti-fragile came up. But we know what it means. It means that some systems or some things, like if you're lifting weights, by lifting weights, you make yourself able to lift more weights. And so when a stressor happens to you, by going through that, it makes you more capable, okay, or stronger.
Right.
Now, when you take a glass, like a wine glass, and you drop it on a concrete floor, that stressor doesn't do the wine glass any good, right? Usually breaks it.
Right.
And even if you tap it gently, it doesn't get any stronger. And so what Nassim Taleb did was, he's got this tremendous background in computational mathematics, and he looks at social systems, he looks at people, he looks at banking laws, he looks at tax laws, he looks at all kinds of stuff, and points out that there are certain things in the society around us and in ourselves with how we make our decisions and how we organize our lives that can make us much more susceptible to failures or make us much more anti-fragile. We get stronger when stresses occur. And that can happen with people. It can happen with families. It can happen with church systems. It can happen with anything that's kind of organic. It can't happen with things that are inorganic, like cars. Best you can do with cars and rockets.
They go downhill
like
fast.
Bingo.
Right.
And so he puts out a foundation in this book that lets you see how he looks at it. And then he goes on to give you example after example that can inform your decision making and your awareness of what's going on around you from that perspective. Because I mean, he lays it out that just because something is efficient doesn't mean it's stable, and it doesn't mean it gets stronger with stresses, but in fact, usually much more vulnerable.
Yeah, because we think of the opposite of fragile as something that's strong or robust, but that's actually not the opposite, according to his definition. Like something that's just robust or strong, let's say a car, you know, that a car doesn't get stronger if it gets in a car wreck, or a car just breaks down. But yeah, like you were saying, when it comes to social systems or like people, like there's ways to actually live out your life to actually get better with stress. Is that the kind of the point
like,
of the
book? One idea is curiosity is an anti-fragile thing he brought up in the book, because it gets magnified every time you try to satisfy it, and in a positive way. Like you think about a car breaking down, that's fragile, but curiosity is anti-fragile because it never stops if you keep feeding it. It's like always growing in a positive sense.
Yeah. One of his coolest examples was talking about a taxi driver, where once you've learned the streets and the rules, then after that, that potential to get better is a day-by-day stressor as you adapt to the changes in the market. On the other hand, the person living next door to him who works in an office doesn't get many stressors. They get narrowly focused, and then, you know, they get very good at it. And by age 45, the taxi driver is an ace at being able to survive lean times and adapt to the market. Whereas by 45, if something happens to that guy in the office and he loses his job, he's so narrowly focused and he's had so little stressors and growth in the different areas that he's having a real time finding a new job. So he fails economically sometimes.
Because he's used to that steady salary and he's not having to deal with, you know, stresses, or it's just kind of a consistent, you know, paycheck to paycheck job. And so basically that it might be a robust job, like it might be a quote, you know, like a what's the word?
Government
consistent
job.
Like a right.
Yeah.
It's a job that's, you know, a steady paycheck and everything, but it's not anti-fragile because it doesn't get here, there's not the potential to grow, or there's not the, like, if you're an entrepreneur, like a business owner, you're constantly in that state of having stresses. Yeah, exactly. And so you can learn from everything you're doing to become stronger through that. You know, you don't have a steady paycheck or a robust job, but that's not what you want.
And the reason the book brings this up is undercompensation versus overcompensation. If you're living the same life every day, no stressors, you're undercompensating almost invariably. And the alternative is overcompensating, which the book brought up, like, if you're in a horse race and you're the fastest horse, you'll always lose against slower horses because you're undercompensating in that race. But you'll always win against the faster horses because it pulls out the best in you.
Yep.
Interesting. There's a quote from the book. It said, the three most harmful addictions are heroin, carbohydrates, and a monthly salary.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So if you're gonna overdetermine it, it sounds like you should get a monthly salary and have a side hustle that brings you in some economic and other development that makes you more anti-fragile.
And that's the perfect segue into the barbell strategy, which he brings up in the book several times, which is having two opposite extremes you're living by. The concept is you'll always lose out. Well, you always have greater potential to lose out if you're just in the middle. But if you can maximize either extreme, like, for example, maximize aggressiveness and paranoia, that's like putting all your eggs in two baskets and you won't lose everything because you're calculating which baskets they're in really well. And I think the example there was like, you could have the side hustle and the consistent paycheck job. Well, that means that if the side hustle crumbles, not a big deal. You can fall back on what your main job is.
Right. It's also how the SEALs think, because if you ever want to put aggressiveness and let's call it willingness to address and deal with the worst, that's kind of the prescription for a Navy SEAL.
Yep.
Right.
Actually, the book brought up, like, with relationships, you want to talk to the janitors and the highest up executives and ignore the people in the middle. because if you can see either extreme really well, you get the full picture over that spectrum and you're ready to react, because that's, you're trying to get to the upper extreme by seeing how the lower extreme works, kind of.
Right. You want the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. Which you can get with anti-fragile.
That's right.
A pretty cool concept.
It's interesting, the idea that you want to be unstable, or you want disorder in your life that causes you to grow, or stressful situations are what make you stronger. If, you know, it's a different idea than just being strong already. Or it's like we see people that are, you know, successful people, and we think, oh, they're really robust and strong. No, actually, they're really they're probably the least, you know, robust people, because because they're always like, I'm not sure the best way to explain it.
It's always the same for them. They're not ready for it. So they're not ready for an extreme situation either direction, because they don't have any variability day to day already. So it's not, they can't absorb a hit.
Right. They've gotten so optimized in their specialty that anything bad happens, they're goners. Quick example. I was told when I was working in a reactor plant, I was told by one of the managers that I ought to take it easy on him. I had been criticizing what was going on, and I ought to take it easy on him because I need a job too. And that not only pissed me off, it was inaccurate. So I turned around and made sure everybody could hear me talking to him. I said, you know what? I can always go flip burgers. Can you? And that ended it. Because the reactor
plant,
oh yeah. I was irritated that he would think I could be intimidated. And it occurred to me that all he had done was be a, call it an office politician in an engineering world.
Interesting. Yeah, he wasn't ready to handle that extreme, in a sense.
No, and he thought
because
I wasn't.
He's completely trained for the middle.
So it's like most people don't want to, I mean, we all don't want to do something that's outside of our comfort zone, you know, doing, being having like different skills. Like that's what you have to do to have multiple skills and become good at something is to do lots of different things that are hard to do. Like I just remember in doing business, like you have to talk, you have to have like really hard conversations sometimes, or you have to be good at making conversation. And at first when you start, or for me when I was younger, you know, conversations can be really awkward, or just, you know, just being confident enough and, you know, talking to clients or trying to do sales or whatever. It's really uncomfortable to do that. But in doing that, the only way to do that is to do it and become better at it and slowly learn, because of all the stress you're having to deal with, you learn ways to overcome that and to get better at it. You know, if there's never just a point where you're just like, you see someone, oh, they're just good at it. They've been good at it their whole life. No, they had to like really be in a state of disorder to get to that level where they're at.
It's a multiple step process though, because first you have to learn your foundation. And then you have to recognize when things aren't where you expect. And then you have to, in that stress and disorder, hopefully look at somebody who's figured it out and follow their example. But if you don't have that example, you better be trying things that get you into a better place. And so people who run away to a simple job that you do over and over again are pretty much destined to stay that way. And same way with systems. You know, you take a social group or a situation that just keeps retreating into more efficiency and less stress. One of the things the book points out is it teaches you how to look for situations like that and don't get tangled up in it, because ultimately it's going to fail.
But it's tempting to get tangled up in it because it seems efficient in the moment.
Oh yeah.
That's the tough part. And the problem with efficiency this book brings up is the most efficient systems are on the verge of collapsing.
Right.
And they're at their peak capacity.
Interesting.
Right. And they talked about a term of jargon called domain dependent, and it means within your particular area, your game works best. But once you get out of that domain, that's like somebody who's used to riding herd on a cattle ranch. If you take them and move them off to different kinds of livestock or farming vegetables or something like that, that's domain dependent knowledge that they can't carry over. So you need to be to get out of your domain and learn things associated with the rest of the human race and the other systems.
Yeah, it's like more information is valuable. Having more options is better. Like on this line of thought, I live near DC, and DC is infamous for its metro in rush hour, which is super crowded. And particularly one line, the Red Line, it's the only east-west connector pretty much downtown. And whenever you're downtown in rush hour and you hear the words, the Red Line is delayed, that is terrible, because that's your only way across the city, east and west. But it happens so often that it's delayed because in rush hour, they're sequencing trains every 2 to 4 minutes coming through that station in each direction. If one train gets stuck, which has happened to me before, there's delays all the way back the line, 15 minutes, and they keep compounding, even though it looked efficient moments before.
Right.
That's the problem with efficiency. You think you have it all in the bag, and then one thing puts a wrench in the works and it's all done. It's over.
Right. So then you've got to figure out, can you go around it? And ultimately, can you move?
Right. Exactly. And a lot of times you can't, because it's your only option. You've put all your eggs in that basket at that point, because that was the efficient thing. That was where things moved the best.
So you were in the military, Mary?
Yep. Navy. So, yes. Navy engineering duty officer.
Wow. So did you see, what are some examples that you've seen in your life or career that relate to this book?
For this book, it didn't occur to me when I was choosing my career, but the few times I was in offices, it made me a little crazy, and I begged to be sent to the field. Because when you're out in the field, you can actually add value in a way that uses your imagination, your creativity, as well as teamwork. When you're in an office, most of the time, it's just processing one thing after the other in an endless stream of whatever. And you can say that in a shipyard, but every ship that comes in is different. The refuelings that we've had to do and like hull repairs, turbine generator repairs, the various coordinations that you have to work with the schedulers and the welders who are able to hang upside down while they weld because it's a strained compartment. Those people are valuable. And if they're working in a different dry dock and you need them in yours, you have to work so that both schedules work. You can't afford to compete. And so you have to make the of the social shipyard collaborate better. And so the scarce resources, like those fabulous nuclear welders, they suddenly take on the level of rock star when you don't have enough of them and your schedules are relying on them. And so everyone has to basically serve the people who are the scant resources so that we can serve the bigger goals. And when you can put your own goal down a little bit so that the bigger goals go forward, that talks a little bit also to what was in this book, where if you try to optimize your own world, and instead of seeing the bigger picture of what it takes for the team to win, if you define your team as the whole shipyard versus your particular dry dock, the people who tried to make their own careers go forward were usually the ones who not only did everybody hate them, but they became so inefficient overall that they ended up creating bigger problems than they solved.
The book was talking about how we keep dumbing people down now to washing machines with owner's manuals. That, like, we deep down crave randomness, which you get when you're in a dry dock with the different kinds of issues that crop up. But if we reduce everyone down to the welder is a welder and only this kind of welder, and you don't realize they're a person with unique abilities, it changes the way you work with them and you become inefficient because you don't treat them as a person. And that's a problem now that it's going
absolutely that correct. Right. And one of the military, hopefully it's changing, but one of the things that kept getting hammered on me was I was entirely too collaborative and I didn't show my authority enough. And what
too collaborative?
Did,
that's an insult in the military?
Back then. And plus, there were very few women in this field. And so my willingness to collaborate with people was seen as an unwillingness to take responsibility and leadership. I didn't have any problem throwing somebody in the brig. It was no problem at all. But for the most part, people wanted to do the right thing. And the systems that they were handed were constraining. And so long as you're not breaking laws or rules, you need to organize yourself so that the mission gets done most effectively, not so that we do it like we've always done. And so so creating hate and discontent was one of my specialties when people saw what I was doing and they hadn't seen it done that way. And in general, the older guys who didn't want to move up but wanted to be good at what they did, they were the ones who would help the most by telling you, well, look, you see that crane over there? It's going to head over to the other dry dock. If you can catch it right now and do this lift here, that'll save us 3 or 4 days. They couldn't make that happen, but I could. And the people who were into being authoritative would say, well, I didn't think of it, therefore it can't be that important. When somebody's willing to help you and then you go check and see if what they said is correct, and then you go flag that crane down and you ask them to do a lift and you get the change, you know, do all your paperwork real quick to get the change done, then you'll gain 3 days on the dry dock rather than try and boss the poor guy around who tried to give a suggestion.
So it takes being vulnerable yourself a little bit.
Right.
Being because you're opening yourself up to criticism.
Right. And every now and then somebody will try and take advantage of you.
Right. You know, so this is an interesting concept because the book was talking about the treasure of knowledge is not in the center where everyone thinks it is, like commonplace knowledge. It's on the outskirts.
Correct.
You have to look to the extremes to find it.
Yep.
Interesting.
So it's the options you didn't think of.
Is that kind of what happens with the bigger companies or corporations where all their employees are just kind of, you know, set in a, you know, very strict structure where they're not allowed to improvise and grow and, like, you know, contribute and think of ideas or whatever. It's they're more locked down. And one example is, like, in my dad's family business, the best workers are the people that are cross-trained in all the different types of jobs within within the company that are really good in all the different situations. And those are always the most valuable employees, or the ones that are just kind of like there just to do their job and just to do their work, you know. Those generally do not contribute nearly as much as people who know all the different parts of the company and who kind of can do this thing and then do that thing and are kind of in that state of like, I'm not exactly sure what the right word is.
It's kind of like the more people you have, the harder it is to collaborate and be creative across multiple groups, I guess, because there's more inertia resisting your change that you want to make, the more people you add to the mix.
It's a really difficult balance, because if you take a high-risk environment like a nuclear plant, you don't want a lot of innovation and creativity with how to run a nuclear plant.
Right. Right.
There's ways to do things better, ways to do things more efficiently, and ways to do things more safely and reliably. But within that, you can do a lot of problem solving. There's a lot of room for that, but you can't afford to have cowboys who go off doing stuff without mentioning to somebody else, oh, I'm going to go do this. Because the last thing you want to do is surprise the control room. They don't take that well.
Yeah. No, I bet. That's crazy.
Interesting.
So basically, a rigid system does not survive. But within that rigid system, there has to be optimization, not for the sake of efficiency necessarily, but you need to optimize for stability. And that, I think, is the key learnings for the book, that we have failed to optimize for stability in favor of optimizing for efficiency in most every system out there that makes money.
Because we like structure in general. And the more structure you add, the more interconnected things become, and the more that taking one block out will take down the whole structure versus allowing flexibility in each segment so that it's like operating independently of the others and can handle stressors better.
And sometimes the accountants get into the efficiency business to maximize your quarterly profits at the expense of stability initiative.
Right.
Doing the right thing for the 40-year gain as opposed to the 3-month gain. And imagine if you raised your children based on a 3-month return on investment. That's a whole nother problem.
Right. Yes.
Reactor plants are 40-year projects. Children are 25. You can't do quarterly profits without understanding the impact on that long-term investment.
Right.
Yeah. Well, this has been a really fun book to talk about, Anti-Fragile. Before I read this, I was reading the title and I'm like, things that gain from disorder? This is pretty catchy that you can actually do that. And tons of really cool lessons in here. So it was really fun to talk about this. Thanks for bringing it up as a recommendation, Mary.
Happy to. Thanks for talking about it.
So how can people find you? Do you have any online presence or anywhere people can reach out to you if they want to learn more about what you do?
No, I just popped up to say something about the podcast. I'm a engineering contractor and I do risk analysis, things like that. So this is my arena at all.
So you found us through the survey, which is awesome. And listeners, if you want to get a book featured that you've been wanting us to talk about, you can do that at motivationminute.com and tap survey, just like Mary did. And we hope you'll tap subscribe if you haven't already. We'll see you next week for another book just like this.